Welcome back to the If You Build a Podcast, and we have a special guest today.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Well, it's so quick. We've done many interviews, and I've done many interviews in my life. We interviewed the mayor of Oshawa, and his story is one that I think you could relate to any aspect of your life, especially to business. And so we hummed and hawed after interviewing him last month, and we decided that, you know, this is an appropriate interview to have on If You Build It for episode number 20.
Yeah, it shows a complete journey from nothing to greatness.
Anything to add there, Simon?
Without further ado, enjoy the interview.
Thank you.
Welcome back, everyone, to our Support Local series. Rian and Will from the DR Group.
Hello.
And Will, we have a special guest today.
I'm super honored. The mayor of Oshawa, Dan Carter, is here with us today. And thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for the invite. I thought this was like GQ Today or something. Because all of us, look at us.
We don't look as sharp as you do. Let's be serious here.
I should have worn a tie.
No. There's some people that need a tie, some people that don't need a tie. You guys don't need ties.
Thank you.
Thanks for the invite.
Well, really anytime. Thanks for coming.
Yeah.
So, first question.
Yeah.
Tell us your story, your journey, what got you to this point?
Well, in 2014, I was elected a regional and city councilor. And for about 25 years before that, I always say I was a huge TV star. I had 7-8 people a night watching me. So, I mean, you know, so I worked in local television for about 25 years. And I was very, very fortunate on that. But I got my wife really made me make a decision in 2014 about running for public office. And I hesitated through it. I mean, I was asked to run provincially and federally, and I backed away from it. And a big part of the reason why I didn't put my name on a ballot was because of my backstory.
Yes.
And my backstory is I'm a recovering alcoholic and drug addict. I've been clean since 1991, June of 17th.
Wow. Amazing.
Thank you.
That's amazing.
But, you know, when I entered into rehabilitation, I'm 6'2", I weigh about 220. I was about 110 pounds. And I was pretty sick. I always say that I was mentally, emotionally, physically, financially, and spiritually broken. And, you know, this goes to, you know, the timely of our conversation really is timely of where our nation is right now.
Exactly.
There's a lot of people that are dealing with opiate-related illnesses. You've got other individuals that are dealing with mental health. And everybody thinks that, you know, this is choices. And I try and explain to people that many of us come to our struggles with mental health or addiction through brokenness. And in my circumstance, it was, you know, I do this speech and I say, was I being punished or prepared? And, you know, really quick, I mean, I lost my mom when I was very young. I was put into foster care, was adopted, had a severe learning disability when I was a kid and didn't learn how to read until I was in my 30s. I mean, it was just, you know, I struggled so tremendously. I was raped as a 7-year-old, and that played a significant role in my life. And I never spoke about it because of the shame that went with it. And then when I was 13, my brother Michael, that was a police officer and father of three, was killed. And that really shook my world up. It really, there was one thing after another. And you think about self-esteem, self-worth, and all those. And the one thing that alcohol and drugs gave me was all the things I dreamed about I was. And I wasn't a great athlete. I wasn't a smart person. I wasn't good looking. I wasn't charming. But drugs and alcohol gave me all that. Suddenly I was funny. I was charismatic. I was, you know, it was all the things I dreamed about. The issue being is I'm an addict. And it starts off as a coping mechanism and becomes out of control. And so, like I say, by the 17th of June, 1991, I was mentally, emotionally, physically, financially, and spiritually broken. And like a good addict, we destroy everything around us, our friends, our family. We're not great people. And, you know, I wasn't a great person. And you know, I sit here today because of forgiveness, redemption, hope. You know, a lot of people gave me an opportunity to be able to make amends. And I'm very, very fortunate that I have this opportunity. But I also kind of understand that prepared or punished, maybe I was being prepared for something. And maybe I was supposed to go through these things so that at this moment, as our nation is facing some of the most struggling issues that the public is facing, I've gone through personally. And that's a relatable piece to those that are struggling or watching today. And I think it's you use these events. Both of you have had experiences. Both of you have gone through things. Both of you have probably lost somebody. Both of you had times in your life where you kind of really thought to yourself, "Is you know, like, I know that there's more to me than this. I know that I can succeed." And there's these dark periods. And I think that those moments really give us the strength to be able to carry on and also be able to contribute. And it really goes to the DNA, right? So I'm a very blessed individual because of my background, but it's also shaped me for who I am today.
Wow. Okay, well, that's it,
everybody. Yeah, I know. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah. Have a good day. Yeah. Well, how do you go from... I've met you many times. Durham College, we met when you were... big time celebrity, coming to golf tournaments and stuff. But your story was always amazing to me because you came from such darkness.
Yeah.
And did you see yourself sitting here today?
No, back then. No, and I still remember this. And I still remember when I was in rehab, my sponsor said, you know, Danny, bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people. And so you need to be prepared for it. What I didn't realize was in 2000, 9 years into my sobriety, is I lost my sister through suicide. And that was devastating to me because my sister also saved me. And my sister was a successful businesswoman, didn't have issues with addiction, didn't have mental health issues. Yeah, you know, we don't have enough time to get into it, but it was just one of those unbelievable moments where it just shook my world kind of thing. And, you know, people say, you know, did you see yourself here? Absolutely not. I remember my sponsor saying to me, he said, you know, someday you're going to have a job and you're going to be married. I said, I have no driver's license. I don't have a bank account. Please don't tell me that these things are going to happen, because they're not. What I do know is through recovery, slowly I was given opportunities to be able to actually rebuild my life. I didn't realize it at the time, but the first thing was a job. Like, I don't have a high school diploma. I don't have a college degree. You know, so that was somebody believing in me, right? Then it was somebody that saw something in me and said, you'll talk to anybody. Why don't you do a TV show? And I'm like, oh, come on, right? And, you know, I ended up getting a television show on Rogers. And what I found out was I had a fascination for people because it was one way I could be educated. A good friend of mine, Jim Flaherty, said to me one time, he said, Danny, know an inch thick about everything. So what you do is you learn from others, right? Yeah. And so interviewing people gave me the opportunity to be able to learn. And that, what I didn't realize is I was really bad at it at the beginning and then became really good at it. But a lot of people gave me that opportunity to grow. And they gave me other opportunities. And what happened is this slow walk up the mountain built my self-confidence and my self-worth. Then I was willing to take chances there. I was willing to learn from others and be able to kind of see my own mistakes. Even today, I mean, I'm a better leader today than I was 6 years ago. I think I'm a better leader than I was 15 years ago. And I hope I'm a better leader 6 years from now. But I learned from others and I learned from their experiences. And I think I would say leadership is four things. Enthusiasm or ignorance. Well, enthusiasm for sure. Ignorance of not really realizing how difficult it is. And enthusiasm, by the way, is passion also at the same time.
Yeah.
Having a passion for it, like you guys, you got passion about it. The other aspect of it is humility and ego. An ego to say I can do this, but humility to be able to say I don't walk alone and I've never accomplished anything by myself. And I think those four kind of attributes, if you can embrace them, it's not a sign of weakness, it's a sign of strength. And I think it helps you as a leader. And it also, I learned through my 30 years plus of sobriety now, everything didn't come to me immediately. It came to me over a period of time, and a lot of generosity, like people like yourselves, gave me the opportunity to be able to evolve. And I'm the luckiest person around. I'm so blessed because the community's been so good. Sorry,
I've learned so much. It's not a little time, right?
Amazing.
So,
amazing. Any other questions?
Yeah, I know. So you talked earlier with Saman about you're active. What do you do for fun? Like, what kind of activities do you do?
Well, I mean, COVID hit. I've always been a person that loves the gym, right? I was a long distance runner for the longest period of time. My hips and knees can't take it anymore.
Same with mine.
I was going to say,
my hips, and also the ground.
You and I have swimmer bodies. So, I mean, anyways, but I loved running. But being an addict, I do everything to an extreme, right? So when I ran, I didn't run 5 kilometers in the morning. I'd run 15 kilometers.
Wow.
On the weekend, I'd run
seriously?
50. Yeah. I mean, it was just, I'm an addict. So I do everything to an extreme. So
right.
Part of being an addict, you have to learn is about discipline and about how to do it. But what we put a gym in the house, and I really enjoy every morning about at 5:30, I work out in our gym in the house, and I really enjoy that. A big part of my wife's and my life now is we're doing a little bit more traveling, and I'm really glad about that. We didn't really have the opportunity. And 8 years ago, we bought a home in Orlando just outside the gates of Disney. And we love our time that we spend down there. We spend a lot of time, and golf is a big part of it.
Okay.
But a big part of our life is my grandkids. And Carter's 12, Bennett's 9, and Miss Carolina May is 6, or maybe 7 soon. So
nice.
That's a big part of it. And we just, I shared with you guys just before we came on air, was we do a thing on Sundays where it's family, faith, and football. And so we love football, and so we get together. We have dinner every Sunday, and we're people of faith, so we enjoy our Sundays together.
So who's your football team?
So you're gonna probably gonna get a lot of boos on this. I'm like, you know, for the longest period of time, I was a Toronto Maple Leaf fan too, and I've suffered since 1960 on that one, and now I'm suffering with the Dallas Cowboys, right? So
Dak, tough this year with them.
And you know the worst part about it is you see all this talent. There's a great book that John Maxwell put out called "Talent Is Never Enough," and it really reminds me about the Dallas Cowboys. A lot of times they have a lot of talent. I don't know if they have the desire.
Yeah, desire is everything in sports.
It is. It's I still remember Wayne Gretzky saying one time when they lost the very first time they played for the Stanley Cup and they lost it against the Islanders.
Yep.
And he said he walked by the Islanders dressing room and they were all just like just gassed, right? And he said, I really realized at that moment what it took to be a champion. And I think that that's something, as I watch Dallas sometimes, I really think that they struggle with understanding the price that's needed to be paid to be world champions. So
you watch any of the basketball that was just done on college?
The women's
college. It's unbelievable. And you know what was wonderful about that is, and you're seeing it in women's sports, and now you've got a professional women's hockey league.
Yes.
Crowds are doing great. Basketball, they had, 14 million viewers for...
Yeah, record of 18 for the championship on Sunday.
Unbelievable.
We were glued. And I have 2 girls, so let them watch that was...
It's
phenomenal.
Amazing. And now we also had the women's amateur at Augusta.
That's
and
right.
So they played there, and of course... the Masters is coming up, but yeah, it's just wonderful to be able to see that kind of change in our sporting world, and it's really exciting to watch. I mean, some of the best. I'd like to see the prize money get up there, especially in golf for women.
Yes.
You look at Brooke Henderson or a Canadian.
Yep.
You know, when you win a women's tournament, you're getting $350,000. On the other side, guys are getting 1.6, yep. right? And so you need that, but. It's great to be able to see, but yeah, the college games are just incredible.
I actually enjoyed the women's more than
I watched the men's last night.
It's funny. Everybody says the same thing.
Men's boring last night.
It seems like it's a lot more intense, right?
Yeah. Well, and their skill level is just so much better, right?
Yeah. So it is amazing to be able to watch. And
so what does a day look like for you? Like you say, you wake up at 5:30 workout, which I think is ridiculous. But wake up at 5:30 in the morning to work out.
Listen,
I don't even say that's why I look like this, and you guys look like
I run. But I got to be honest with you, it's hard to get up at 5:30 in the morning, especially in the wintertime.
Oh, true.
Because I don't like the darkness, I don't like the cold, and I'm not a big fan of winter.
Right.
So that I always struggle with that.
Right.
Summer and spring, it's a lot easier. Usually up at 5:30, like I say, usually do about an hour in the gym, and then I try and read all 4 newspapers first thing in the morning, try and get through my emails that I get. I have to sleep with 2 phones because I get calls through the night from police, fire, or facility, so a lot of that is done. Our days are usually packed from morning to night in regards to meetings. I have a great staff.
How many staff do you have?
So I have 2 staff members that look after me, my chief of staff, Mark, and I also have 2 EAs right now, Miss Leah and Miss Marlou. And so they look after me in regards to my day. A lot of it is, meeting with a lot of different constituents, different government bodies to be able to kind of make sure that our picture is clear and concise. I speak a lot, so I get an opportunity to be able to do that. And so it just, the day is usually packed right through. Some nights are a little bit later than others. On an average, we do about 300 events a year in regards to openings and special events. So that's a lot. So
yeah, that's a ton.
Yeah. So it's just a busy day. So when I have the chance to be away, one of the things that my CAO, Tracy Adams, says, you know, we don't want you calling the office, right? And so it's just, you need that time. If there's one piece of advice I'd give people in leadership, is try and find the time to make sure you get the rest. Spend time with family, spend time with friends. Even if you're passionate, you love what you do, also find that time for yourself, because it really, you need that recharging. You guys know it too, right?
Yes,
you get rid of the cobwebs, and the next thing you go is, how is it that a 4-day weekend made that much of a difference? You come in Tuesday and you're like, hey, okay, you know, I figured this thing out. You go, well, what happened? I had a 4-day weekend, right?
Right. Yeah.
So I'm advocating now that everybody go to a 4-day weekend.
You know? So, you have a question.
And what's your favorite local business or a place you like to visit or eat at? Or
favorite restaurant.
Yeah. Well, we love food.
Yeah. You know what? And I'm not a foodie, but there's a lot of things that I like. I really enjoy. There's a small shop that I love. Again, it's run by a husband and wife. It's called Berry Hill.
Yep.
And Berry Hill.
Just food is there. Yeah.
They have this sandwich called the Drum. I don't know if you've ever had it. It's you're gonna try.
I had the steak sandwich on Amazon.
Oh yeah, I know the steak sandwich is good.
So good.
But the Drum is this kind of chicken sandwich, and it's just dynamite, right? Again, the atmosphere is really funky. It's like this place. Right?
Yeah,
it's kind of funky. It's,
Vibe.
Older buildings, stuff like that. So I really, really enjoy going to Berry Hill. But there's so many. I mean, Teddy's has been around forever, we go there on a regular. Avante's, I love the shrimp cocktail. We love going to, Bistro 36. There's a lot of different restaurants we love, and you know, it's, you know, for us, it's hard to find the time to be able to just kind of relax. And you know, one of the things that I understood, or I understand now better than I did when I first was elected in 2018. Is that you are always on display.
Yeah.
And so when we're at restaurants and different things, people will come over to our table and either say hello or they'll give you a hard time. I'll tell you why. So when I was in television, the very first experience I had, I was in a grocery store one time, and I heard these people whispering, right? And I thought, and they're looking at me, and I'm kind of going, I don't know what I'm supposed to do, right? And I'm picking up soup that I'm not going to drink, and I'm putting it in the thing, and I'm just trying to kind of, I don't know what to do. I know they're staring at me. I know they're saying something. I'm not really sure. So a good friend of mine, Ken Shaw, that was the anchor at CTV, has been a mentor of mine and a good friend for about 30 years now. I went to Ken and said, I said to her, this isn't about my ego. I just need to share this with you. And I said, people are kind of pointing and, you know, that they're you can hear them talking, and there's this uncomfortableness. And I said, I don't know how to deal with it. And he said, walk right up to them and say, hi, I'm Danny. And your name is? And break that right away. Oh my God, I thought it was you. You know, and it's,
yep.
So it's the same thing now as a mayor. I never introduce myself as Mayor Carter. I always introduce myself as Dan. And they go, but you're the mayor, aren't you? And I said, yes, I am. Mm-hmm. But I'm Dan first. And so I've always kind of done that. And for Paula, she understands it. Paula and myself have been together about 20 years and married about 13. And she understands that that's part of the role that I've embraced and she's embraced. What people should understand is politics is not just the one individual, it's the whole family.
Yep.
So as much as I talk about my grandkids, you don't see pictures on social media with my grandkids. It's very private. That's their life.
Good.
But Paula and myself are public figures, and we understand what we signed up for. So, yeah. So, but it's a great question because, you know, you have to, you know, there's different reasons why people want to meet you. I mean, in some circumstance, they want to say, hey, you know, I got a brother that's struggling like you did. You got any words of advice, right? Or somebody might, you know, we've had people just come up and say, I've got a kid that's got dyslexia and I heard you're dyslexic. I said, yeah. They said they, you know, they really kind of look down at themselves. Would you mind just saying hi to them? And it's sure. I mean, it's, you, those are the things. Or people come to you and start yelling at you and you just,
but I'm gonna say that, yeah.
But
yeah,
that's,
that would happen.
But you also have to understand if this is the role you signed up for, and that's the outlet because I'm the most accessible, then you have to understand that that's part of the job. And it's not your job to sit there and deflect. It's your job to sit there and listen and say, maybe I understand what you're saying or maybe you're not. And I can explain to you what steps we've taken to be able to address something. But if that's not an option that's available, then what happens is I just have to allow that, allow them to get it off. I'd rather them scream and yell at me than go home and scream and yell at the kids or their neighbors, right?
Yeah.
So it is what it is, and I love my job, and I've been very fortunate to have it.
Are you going to rerun in a couple of years for re-election?
I've always believed in term limits. I'm in my second term.
Yes.
I've always believed two terms and up or two terms and out. So my term will be finished on November the 16th, 2026. What I can tell you is I won't be in the role of mayor for the great city of Oshawa. What role, either elected or not elected, I can't really mention at this particular time.
Sure.
But there's been a lot of discussions about what's the next chapter of my life. And what I do enjoy is I've been lucky. I've 12 years, I'll be holding a public office. And you think about it, my first mayoral election, I won with 70% of the support. My second mayor was 65%. I've been very, very fortunate in that. And I also just believe that you need different ideas and different energy and different leadership at different times. And, you know, then there's others that say, well, you know, you look at Hazel. And I said, but there's outliers to everything, right?
Yeah.
There's, you know, Jagger that's still playing at what, you know, 48 or 49. Like, it doesn't happen for everybody, right? So you just have to understand that. And I think I want to serve at the highest level. So anyways.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, this was...
yeah. Mind-blowing.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, thank you.
Thank you.
Michael, your story inspires me. It should inspire everyone. Because I think anything's possible here in what you've been through and where you are today. When you talk to people that are sort of struggling, you must get that too. Like, what kind of advice can you give them?
I think the biggest thing is that recovery is possible. I think that's what they have to understand. Forgiveness is also possible. I think that most of us feel that the darkness that we have lived in and the things that we have done can never be forgiven. And therefore, I think it's difficult for people to come to terms of making that big decision about creating new pathways. But I just try and tell people that there are people that they're dedicated in regards to trying to help people get onto the right pathways and that recovery is possible and forgiveness is available. What we do with that and how we serve moving forward and how we use redemption is entirely up to them. But those two first items are available. And, you know, you just hope that sooner or later they hear that message. And I'm a great believer that all of us are, none of us are wasted extras in this world. I'm a great believer in that. I believe that we've all been created, whatever faith that we have, we've been created at this particular moment, gifted, talented, and equipped to be a part of this society. And I don't believe anybody is an extra. I believe that all of us have purpose.
Nice.
Wow. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Honestly.
It's great.
Yeah, honestly.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I still think that we should be on the front cover of some kind of
interview
local GA.
Of our lives right here. Thank you, Mr. Look at that. Amazing. Yeah. Bond Street Entertainment venue.
It's beautiful. Unbelievable. It's
insane.
Beautiful.
The team here, incredible. Thank you for all of this.
Yeah.
So good. But wow, what an interview.
Honestly, one of our best.
And I've interviewed many. One of our best.
I'm still processing. You know what I mean?
Salon, do you agree?
Yeah.
Isaac,
yes.
Best ever. Thank you. Honestly, your openness is something that is so amazing.
Yeah.
And so not seen from politicians. So we really do appreciate that.
Yeah. Well,
thank you very much.
Thank you guys for watching, and we'll see you soon.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, honestly,
I'm like,
wow. The color.